You're listening to 91.9 FM WUOT Knoxville. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, and this is Dialogue. Over the last few decades, you could always count on three things in East Tennessee: death, taxes, and Knoxville ending up on a list of cities with bad air quality. Since then, though, the air we breathe has improved dramatically. But are those improvements in our air quality enough to make a difference in the lives of those who suffer from asthma or other respiratory ailments? Does East Tennessee's geography mean we'll always face an uphill climb when it comes to air quality? And what more can be done to fix it? Today on Dialogue, a panel of air quality experts takes a look at our history of bad air and closely examines the improvements that we're now seeing. Join us for Dialogue after this news. Six minutes after 1 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon, this is Dialogue from 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, and springtime has arrived, that's for sure. The last couple of weeks we were dealing with some sluggishly cold temperatures and rain, and this week that all went away. We got sunshine, we've got all of our usual signs of springtime. Temperatures rising, flowers blooming, but another sign that springtime and warmer weather has arrived in East Tennessee, I saw from my office just this afternoon eating my lunch. Usually I can look outside my window and see the hills of South Knoxville, and today that was true too, but they're a little grayer today than they were, say, a few weeks ago. And that's a sign of another problem that we have here in East Tennessee, another sort of a harbinger of spring and summer, and that's our air quality issues that we've been struggling with, in some cases, for decades. Now, over the years, the Smoky Mountains have become the most pronounced representation of the quality of our air, or perhaps lack thereof, and it's a problem that reaches back generations. In more recent years, we've begun to see some dramatic improvement. Today on Dialogue, we've assembled a panel of air quality experts to discuss the region's air quality past, the improvements that we're seeing now, and the work, of course, that still lies ahead. Joining us here in the studio is Lindsay Pace. She's the Tennessee field organizer for Moms Clean Air Force. Jim Parks is the leader of the Emissions and Catalysis Research Group at the Oak Ridge National Lab, National Transportation Research Center. And joining us on the phone, all the way from Washington, D.C., we have Janice Nolan. She's a former member of the Tennessee Air Pollution Control Board. Right now, she serves as Assistant Vice President of National Policy for the American Lung Association. Lindsay and Jim and Janice, welcome to Dialogue.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have
Thank
the mics on.
There Thank
we go.
You.
Welcome again. Well, before we go too far, everybody, let's step back for just a moment and give everybody kind of a briefing on what we're here it is to talk about. A quick primer on what we say when we mean bad air quality. What exactly is bad air? At least when we're sitting in a room somewhere, it doesn't look any different than good air. It's all microscopic, but it has meaning. The pollution that we see when we look out, like outside my office window, into the hills of South Knoxville, they look a little bit grayer, and if you look even further, they're grayer, and the mountains might not even be visible some afternoons, the Smoky Mountains, because of all the haze between us and the mountains. What is that haze made out of? And maybe, Jim, we could start with you on that. What are some of the constituents of that air?
Sure. The haze that we see, and is also commonly called smog, is air pollution that is causing a lack of visibility. That's why we can't see the mountains. There's some primary components that cause that. One of the big concerns is ozone, and that's something that EPA regulates, and that's a problem for Knoxville because we're a non-attainment of that. And ozone is formed when a couple of different pollutants get into the atmosphere and interact via energy of sunlight. Mm-hmm. And those emissions are NOx emissions, oxides of nitrogen, also mixing with hydrocarbons or organic emissions. So those emissions get together with sunlight, create ozone, which is three atoms of oxygen together in one molecule. And that can be very damaging to people's lungs. And so it's a health risk, and that's why we want to control it. But it also affects the visibility. That together with another pollutant that's of concern here in Knoxville, which is particulate matter, or PM. Particulate matter is just fine small particles in the air. Mm-hmm. That can be of very different chemistries depending on its source, but that particulate also will cause problems with our visibility and cause problems with our health.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is something that's interesting to me because, as I mentioned, we're talking about something generally on the molecular level. This is far beyond our ability to see. It's far too small. Is there any way for a casual observer who's not armed with scientific instruments to tell the difference? To have, other than that sort of yardstick of, can I see the mountains today, can I not? Is there any way to tell what's in our air just from a casual glance?
Well, not really. The biggest impact is the visibility, and that's one of the issues with trying to control these pollutants, because you don't necessarily see the pollutants when they're formed until they have actually reacted and made ozone and causing these larger scale visibility issues. There can, however, be some cases where people's health can, and they can notice via their health, irritated throats, irritated eyes, things like you would commonly think about being allergy symptoms. Some of those symptoms could be related to actually the air pollution itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Janice, I want to bring you in since you're joining us from the American Lung Association. Let's talk about some of those health effects. What might we notice on days where the air quality isn't so good?
Some of the most common health effects that people see and have are coughing, wheezing, asthma attacks. Those are some that we have plenty of good evidence to show that these kind of pollutants at the levels we're seeing in Knoxville can create. Some of them that people may not be aware of that are also related can also be caused by this, are things like heart attacks and stroke. Even things like hospital admissions, and we're learning even more about the harm, so that things like premature death, having a shorter lifespan, is another thing that's associated with both of the ozone and particle pollution that we're talking about. So these are pretty serious. We often find is that people assume that they're wheezing or coughing because of allergies or something, and that may be related. There's also strong evidence that those kind of symptoms are especially early warning signs for the rest of us that the pollution is at a higher level.
Mm. Well, Lindsay, I want to turn to you for just a moment. We haven't heard from you yet in our discussion, but you're the Tennessee Field Coordinator for the Moms Clean Air Force. Tell us a little bit about what your group does and why you have a stake in what we're talking about today.
Sure, thank you. We are a national organization, and I have the wonderful opportunity to lead the Tennessee State Chapter. As a community of parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, we're unified in the knowledge that air pollution is not only affecting our kids' health, but also their futures. As a mom, I know that air pollution is adversely affecting my one-year-old daughter's health. Mm-hmm. And I believe that I have a moral obligation to protect her health. And I do this in so many different ways, and so does every parent. I can buy her healthy food, so I will serve broccoli over Oreos for dinner. Or I can make sure that the water she's drinking doesn't have contaminated heavy metals. But I can't ensure that when we go down to our neighborhood playground that the air she is breathing is safe for her tiny developing lungs. We can't buy clean air. It is something we can fight for through our political process, and that is what hundreds of thousands of Moms Clean Air Force members are doing all over our country and all over Tennessee. You know, we are unifying our voices and using the power of love that we have for our children to engage with our legislators and demand clean air, you know, because sometimes being a good parent does mean being a good citizen.
Oh, very good. Well, Jim, I want to leap back to you for just a second because Lindsay is based in Chattanooga. You're at ORNL. I live in Knoxville. But we're all kind of sharing the same atmosphere here in East Tennessee. And there might be a lot of folks, especially who are listening to us right now, say in rural locations, who think, pollution is a city problem. That's an urban issue. But the atmosphere, of course, doesn't observe those kinds of boundaries. It circulates, it flows, it spreads pollution all over. When we zoom out to a regional look, like the Great Valley of East Tennessee, which goes from Bristol all the way down to Chattanooga, we're kind of sitting in this topographic bowl. What kind of pollution issues are we talking about in areas even away from cities?
Right, that's a good point. You bring up the geography, and that definitely has a major impact on our air quality because we're located between the Appalachian Mountains and the Cumberland Plateau. We are in this valley, and that tends to breed stagnant air. So the pollution that it does get created where we live in this valley tends to stay here and can accumulate to have air quality problems. We also have a few other things that are working against us on the air quality. Mm. You wouldn't think about it as much, but the trees in East Tennessee, you know, where this is the greenest state in the land of the free, right?
Yeah.
Those trees are all the time releasing hydrocarbons, organic gases. And that was one of the components I mentioned that combined with NOx reacts in the sunlight to perform ozone. So we love our trees. We love to be in this beautiful area. But they're a primary part of why we have air quality issues. That plus all the man-made sources that we have here in East Tennessee. So it's the combination of these factors that do really make it difficult for us to control our air quality.
Mm. Janice, I want to turn back to you for just a moment because you're a former member of the Tennessee Air Pollution Control Board. What were some of the real challenges that you saw, and Jim and I and Lindsay have been talking about this just briefly, the challenges about bringing that air quality into a better position here in East Tennessee? Because there are some factors that we might be able to control, like emissions or industrial output, but you can't control the topography and you can't control the weather. What were some of the big challenges you faced when you worked here?
Well, it remains some of the challenges that we face today, and that is reducing emissions from some of the big sources like coal-fired power plants. TVA has made a lot of progress since I was on the Air Pollution Control Board to reduce the pollution that those plants are producing, not only in East Tennessee, but in other parts of the valley, so that they are not blowing sort of pollution into the valley, so that they are reducing those emissions of NOx that were mentioned that are contributing to the creation of ozone and other pollutants. So that's a big area. And also other sources like emissions from vehicles. Since I left that board, we've actually improved a lot of emission requirements nationwide for vehicles like diesel exhaust. Diesel fuel is much cleaner and is continuing to be cleaner. And also diesel engines have been required to get cleaner as the fleet turns over, a slow process, but a process. And even then, that's after I left that, which was in 2000, we've had new controls put on things like SUVs and pickup trucks so that their emissions are even lower. So these are things that Tennessee could not do by itself. These are things that we needed the help of EPA to be able to put into place, because these are such big sources and because they are contributing. They're not only registered, say, in Tennessee, the trucks that are going up and down I-75 bringing food and clothing or whatever to Tennessee are not registered in Tennessee necessarily. So the control opportunities are limited. That's why we needed some help and got some help from national programs that could reduce those sources that are not only produced in East Tennessee, but are also blown into East Tennessee by the prevailing winds.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to that a little bit on the trucking issue. One of the unique things about Knoxville is we're on a major trucking thoroughfare. 20,000 trucks a day roll through Knoxville. On I-40 and I-75, we're a major connector between the southeast and the northeast in terms of industry and shipping goods. And those trucks have been greatly improved in terms of their emissions. And Oak Ridge National Labs actually had a large part in that, doing the research to enable that. And working together with EPA and industry, we've been able to get those emissions from those vehicles dramatically reduced. And we have catalysts now on those trucks that are reducing the particulate matter and the NOx by over 90% compared to around 2,000 era trucks.
All right. Well, we're going to have lots more to talk about with Janice Nolan, with Jim Parks, and with Lindsay Pace in just a moment. First, though, we're going to pause for a station break. It's 18 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Dialogue from WUOT News. After the hour, and thanks so much for joining us for Dialogue here on WUOT, your listener-supported public radio station. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, joining you on this Wednesday afternoon, an afternoon in which we are looking at some smoggy conditions, at least I can see from my office. Perfect backdrop for our discussion about air quality in East Tennessee. And right before we went to the break, we were talking to you, Jim, just a moment ago. And for those of you who are just joining us, Jim Parks is with the ORNL National Transportation Research Center. They look into how pollutants from automobiles affect our air quality. We also have Lindsay Pace in the studio. She joined us from Chattanooga today from the Moms Clean Air Force. We also have on the phone Janice Nolan from the American Lung Association. We want to hear from you. We have a few folks who are waiting to talk to us, and we're going to get to you guys, the callers, in just a few moments. First, though, Jim, I want to go to a point that you were making right before the break, which is about how some of the national standards have helped lower air quality or lower air pollution rates across the board, which has kind of an aggregate effect. I want to talk a little bit more about what specific changes might have been seen. I mean, we know, I guess, generally speaking, that cars today are much more efficient and make less dangerous stuff into the atmosphere than they used to. But specifically, how does that break down? What changes have been made, if you can explain that briefly, that have helped contribute most significantly to an improvement in air quality?
Yes, I was mentioning the heavy-duty trucks, which is where a lot of the emission regulations that occurred in 2000 are now benefiting us. So in 2007, all those heavy-duty 18-wheeler trucks began having a particulate filter on them to filter out the soot, the particulate matter. and that has reduced those emissions from those trucks by over 90%, so a great dramatic decrease in those emissions. And some of those particulate you can't see, but are the very small particulate that get down into your lungs and can cause the health problems. Mm-hmm. So this is a major gain for us in terms of the air quality here in Knoxville because of the fact that we have so many trucks rolling through. Also, those trucks now have selective catalytic reduction catalytic converters on them that use urea injected in the exhaust to react with the NOx and reduce that to nitrogen, which is harmless and gets out in the atmosphere. So that's another way we're reducing the NOx. And I mentioned that, you know, hydrocarbons are coming from organic sources here in East Tennessee. And so by reducing the NOx, we're able to reduce the ozone by taking that element out of the equation for that reaction. Now, those are benefits. And as Janice mentioned this, these newer trucks starting in 2010 have both those technologies on board. But a heavy-duty truck out there on the road will be out in service for 15 years or so. So as we move forward from 2010, when those regulations went in place and all those trucks moved over to those technologies, we're going to still continue to see benefits from those regulations as the truck fleet turns over. So we'll see a decade or so more improvement in reductions of those emissions from those trucks for our local air quality here.
We're going to go to our first call. This is Terry from Brewstertown. Terry, you're on with Dialogue. Go right ahead with your question.
Thank you, Brandon, and your guest for bringing up this very important and very pertinent conversation, because right now the people that don't want to conserve the air are trying to find ways of scuttling the Clean Air Act. But my point is, you stand by a solar panel or a wind turbine and compare that to standing next to even a small generator, and you're going to find a big difference in the air quality. And Shell Oil Company has a contest every year for fuel mileage. In 2011, their ad in Popular Science said that they got 8,870 miles per gallon equivalent. Why don't we have that kind of technology available to us?
All right, well, Terry, thank you so much for your call. Jim, that sounds like it's your wheelhouse. We're talking about vehicle fuel efficiency. But I think in the more general sense, we're also talking about, as Terry mentioned, that we also have better sources of, say, electricity generation. We hadn't even talked about the role of, say, power plants and big steam generators and things like that in air pollution. But things like wind and solar might help cut down on air pollution in East Tennessee as well. Is that something you've observed?
Yes, and what we see for our programs at Oak Ridge National Lab is you really have to chase these technologies on a broad front. There's no single technology that's going to help solve our air quality issues, so we need to work on them all. These very high mileage demonstrations are really interesting, but while they're really interesting, they're not very practical for everybody, and that's why we need to bring down the emissions and increase the fuel efficiency for all vehicles. And that's actually going into place because right now the EPA Tier 3 emission regulations are out, and you're looking at between 2017 and 2025 dramatic reductions in NOx, more than 70%, and more than 85% reduction in organic gases, plus 70% reductions in PM. This is for passenger cars. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be phased in addition to these fuel economy standards. But certainly we want to find a way to use more renewable sources, because the renewable sources have virtually zero air pollution associated with them. And that's a real benefit. It's just that it's going to take a lot more technology development and research to get those to a cost-effective state where we can use them on a broad front and really make a difference.
I want to talk about some of the people effects. And here, Lindsay, to go back to you, because you made a statement a little earlier this hour about being concerned about your own health and about your child's health. On days that you know that pollutants and ozone are going to be high and there might be some breathing problems, do you do anything that you change your daily routines, or you do any make any kind of special precautions or take out any special actions in relationship to how bad the air might be on a given day?
Sure. Yeah, I look every day, actually, at the air quality index, which is a direct function of the National Ambient Air Quality Standard that the Environmental Protection Agency puts out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, pediatricians tell us that children are obviously especially vulnerable to the harms of breathing air pollution. So when you go hiking on a day that might have an orange high alert, you might feel fine, but that doesn't mean that it's okay, you know, for kids to do that.
Right.
They
right.
need to be protected because their organs are still developing and they're more likely to be playing outside on days that do have high alerts, and so they'll have a greater exposure. So I do. Every day I look at the air quality index and I see, you know, for Chattanooga, what the particulate pollution level is going to be and what the ozone is going to be. And I make a decision based on that. But, I mean, there are so many people who are probably unaware that that exists. And that's a big education tool that we need to, you know, to reach all parents, because it's really not safe for any child to be playing outside on a, you know, an orange alert day.
Right. Well, Janice, this again gets to something with your position at the American Lung Association. Where do we find information about this kind of stuff? If I want to get up in the morning and find out what my air quality is, you know, where would I go to find that? And how do I use the information? What should I do once I learn what the air quality is like?
Well, that's a great question. We have an app that can be downloaded to a cell phone called the State of the Air app. That can alert you based on your geography to unhealthy air days that are forecast. Or you can go to airnow.gov on the internet and look at information available for wherever you're going to be, especially if you're traveling. That might be a good way to find out. And probably, I'm not sure about Tennessee, but a lot of communities, a lot of the metro area air pollution agencies or regional councils of government do offer similar kinds of alerts. I know here in D.C., I get one every day from my local regional council of governments that tells me what the air quality forecast is for the next few days so that you can prepare and protect yourself. She's absolutely right. Lindsay is spot on. One thing that we've learned recently, a new study came out of California that looked at how kids' lungs are developing when they are breathing cleaner air compared to the polluted air they were breathing a few years back. And they followed a large group of cohort of kids and found that their lungs had much more capacity, their functions were better. And that means that they are less likely to suffer as adults from diseases that can bother the lungs as a result of having lower lung function. So these are the kinds of things that most people won't even notice. But the great thing is that we can track it and go, yes, indeed, we are seeing cleaner air actually is healthier air for folks to breathe. And kids who are breathing air as they're outside playing are breathing the whatever air we've got there, and we need to make sure it's as healthy and clean for them as it can be.
Lindsay, what are you hearing when you talk to other parents? I mean, there are a lot of things that adults have to be worried about. We've got mortgages, we've got bills to pay, we've got jobs we got to do. Air quality goes right on that pile. How big a priority do you think it is when you hear feedback from other parents? Where does this rank to them?
I think it depends. Sometimes I do talk to parents who are very engaged and very aware. You know, I think a lot of times parents who have kids who have asthma are, you know, probably already looking at the air quality index every day because smog is a huge trigger for asthma attacks. And asthma is the number one reason that kids miss school and parents miss work. So I think, you know, people who have children who maybe have breathing problems are a little bit more aware. But like you mentioned, I think there is a little bit of a gap because I think sometimes when you don't see, you know, smog or particulate matter like you used to, you know, you run the danger of thinking it's not there, that it's not doing any harm to your children or yourself.
Well, actually, Janice, I want to get back to you on that because this is an interesting question. Because we've seen improvements in our air quality and things are better than a lot of people probably remember them, do you think that might contribute to us maybe a sense of complacency or a sense among people that, well, we fixed the air already. Isn't that done? I mean, don't we need to move on to something else? And instead of it being a sustaining effort to keep the air clean.
You're absolutely right. People perceive every time we go through these kinds of reviews of the science and trying to decide whether the standard is set at the right place or not, I get contacts by people who go, isn't the air clean enough? Aren't we? When are you going to be happy? And my response is when it stops killing people. I mean, we've got plenty of evidence that shows that ozone and particle pollution shorten lives at the levels that we're breathing in communities across the country. Just take Knoxville, for example. When we first did this report back in 2000, I came to Knoxville and did a press conference around it, and people were astonished to find out that the air quality in Knoxville, in our ranking, ranked 12th most polluted in the country. This year's report, Knoxville's improved to 61st most polluted, which is an enormous progress. But Knoxville, those days, had about 80 days a year that were unhealthy. Today, we're looking at 5 days a year. Now, that's a huge improvement, no question about it. But I don't know that anybody in 2000 would have argued that, yeah, we think the air is too polluted and we need to clean it up. But what we're looking at now, even with 5 days on average, it's still too polluted. And that's based on an outdated ozone standard. That's based on a standard that doesn't reflect what we currently know needs to be the level of safe air quality to breathe. So we've still got a ways to go. And the good news is that you can't see it as much as you could. But that doesn't mean that we are where we need to be. That's one of the reasons that we have to look at research, at science, at data that's been collected and analyzed to understand, all right, what are we talking about when we're talking about air that's safe to breathe? Because we're not there yet.
And I'd like to also add to that what Janet's mentioned, that in addition, we have to prepare for the future. We're looking at more cars on the road, more trucks. As our economy improves, we'll have more goods transported. So that means that there's going to be an increase in the number of sources. So we need to make those sources cleaner to get the to keep the air even at the cleanliness level it is now. So as we grow, we want to continue to bring down these emissions so that we can have the air even cleaner.
We're going to go to our next call. Go right ahead, Janice.
That is absolutely true. But we're also seeing a warming climate, and that is going to affect it in that it is going to make it harder to clean up the pollution that's there. And as we're looking at the temperatures increasing at warmer summers, warmer springs, warmer falls, we're going to see more days when it's a good combination for ozone to be created if the raw ingredients are still there. So we have to clean those raw ingredients up. We have to clean those emissions up to be able to fight off these trends that we're seeing.
Actually, before we get to our next call, Todd and Clinton, hold on just a moment, because Janice, you make an excellent point. One of the reasons we see this kind of cyclical bad air quality in the late spring through the summer and into early fall is not purely coincidence or by accident, that the atmosphere in the summertime around here tends to be a little more conducive to holding on to that smog, particulate matter, and ozone as well. So there's a reason that we see worse air quality generally in the warmer months. Isn't that right? Janice?
Absolutely. Heat is one of the things that helps to contribute to the creation of ozone. Sunlight, the raw ingredients, cooking in a nice pot with a warm temperature, and you've got a good recipe for creating ozone.
Okay. Well, all right. So, Todd, thank you so much for being patient with us. Go right ahead with your question.
A friend of mine had asthma so bad he had to move from here to Gainesville, home of the Gators,
where the
air is really clean. Mm-hmm. He now bicycles about 15 miles a day. I read a Hong Kong study that found kids who exercised in polluted air didn't build up their VO2 max, in other words, their speed and endurance, at all. If you're trying to beat your opponent to the finish line or to the end zone or to outlast them in a game, you're running uphill if your VO2 max is worse than theirs. Does that mean our kids may lose out to kids who practice in cleaner air, or that our Tennessee football team may lose to Florida who practice in Gainesville?
Oh, now that's a good question, Todd. Now that's the third rail of Tennessee politics, is bringing up the Vols. But let me see if I can get – we did talk about this in general terminology a little earlier, but Janice, let's hop back to you for this one. We were talking about how polluted air affects kids who are developing. We could also see this affecting them if they have athletic pursuits or anything like that. It has kind of wide-ranging effects over many areas of life.
Absolutely. And as a lifelong Big Orange fan, I definitely don't want the Vols to lose. But I will say what we've seen is the evidence is that as we get cleaner air, that generation of kids have healthier, more active lungs. And so my generation that grew up when the air was even more polluted suffers and will continue to suffer as we get older. But the cleaner we get the air, the easier it's going to be for the kids' lungs to function, and so that they're not going to be as affected by it. And that especially applies to kids with asthma, because not only are they affected by the way their lungs are developing and their lungs function, they already are burdened by a disease that causes difficulty breathing. And so for kids with asthma, it definitely means that the cleaner air is going to make it easier for them to be able to be active and exercise outdoors. And I know there are plenty of athletes who have asthma under control, as we hope they will all ultimately have, so that it's not interfering with them. But we want to make sure that the air quality doesn't add a burden to them, and that's where our goal is.
Well, Lindsay, that sounds like a good jumping-off point to turn back to you as a parent and as someone who's active in the community about this. What arguments do you make to people in, say, government? Do you write letters to the editor? Are you talking to school boards about practices? I mean, how do you carry out the advocacy that is important to you?
Sure. I mean, I think as parents, we're always asking ourselves, how can we get involved? How can we make sure that our child, my children, our children in Tennessee have a great start to their lives? And I think personal actions like carpooling and using your bike as transportations are all wonderful. But this is really a large-scale issue, so it does need a large-scale solution. That's why we need to engage on legislation. And Moms Clean Air Force makes this really easy for even the busiest of parents. We use something that is called naptime activism, and we ask our members to engage in this. And this is something that you can do while your child is napping. You can hop online to our website and sign an online petition to support the Clean Power Plan, or you can call your representative and make your voice heard. And, you know, I think, you know, it really takes such a short time to do that, but it's just so important. Like I said earlier, I really think that, you know, being a good parent means using your citizenship and engaging with your politicians.
What kind of reaction have you gotten from, because again, it's, you could propose this at the state level, but pollution doesn't observe boundaries. I mean, pollution from upstream gets blown downstream, and so we can make every rule we want to in Tennessee, but that's only going to do so much good locally or statewide. What kind of reaction do you get from state politicians, and do you engage with federal politicians as well?
Sure, yeah. We engage a lot with state politicians, and also we have been very active. Like Janice mentioned, the Environmental Protection Agency recently proposed updating the ozone standard, and Moms Clean Air Force, along with many other health organizations, we're very vocal in advocating for a stricter standard of ozone because we know that's going to protect our children's health. And also, you know, carbon dioxide, as we mentioned, is a pollutant that's contributing to climate change. And the Environmental Protection Agency's proposed Clean Power Plan would be the first ever to establish limits on carbon emissions from power plants. You know, breathing atmospheric carbon dioxide is not as near as dangerous as, you say, soot or ozone or smog, but, you know, in terms of climate, it does have a great impact. And honestly, I think personally the takeaway I have gotten the most from engaging with legislators is that they don't hear from us enough. I mean, just picking up your phone and calling your House representative or your senator or Senator Alexander or Senator Corker, I mean, I think they need to hear from us and hear our voice. And, you know, we have every right to do that.
Lindsay Pace of the Moms Clean Air Force joining us here in the studio, along with Jim Parks from the Oak Ridge National Lab, National Transportation Research Center, and Janice Nolan is on the phone from the American Lung Association up in Washington, D.C. It's 22 minutes before the hour. We continue with our discussion about air quality in East Tennessee. Our phone number is 974-5050. If you have a question for the panel, we're going to pause right now for a station break from WUOT News. And dialogue continues right here on WUOT 91.9 FM. Thanks so much for joining us. Don't forget, of course, afternoon concert with Whitney Dodds coming your way at the top of the hour. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, and we're continuing along with our discussion this month on the state of air quality in East Tennessee. We've had a fascinating conversation so far today, and we have an interesting question from Lena in Sevierville. And Lena, go right ahead.
Calling from Sevierville, of course, near the beautiful Great Smoky Mountains. We're very concerned about air quality and the effect it's having not only on our kids, but, you know, on the flora and fauna all over the place. And my question is, you know, hearing from the advocacy group and Janice in Washington, D.C., do you all see this as becoming less of a partisan issue? It seems that, you know, it seems that in the past, anything environmental related tends to be pretty partisan. And I was really encouraged to see Lamar Alexander stand up and say, we need, you know, cleaner air and this needs to be addressed. But do you see both sides of the table coming together more on this, or does it still continue to be a partisan issue?
Janice, do you want to take that one? Janice? Oh, you know what? We lost Janice. I think we just lost the call. So my apologies for that. Lindsay, we were just talking before the break about your involvement in the community and talking to federal officials. Do you see this as being drawn along partisan lines, or does it seem to transcend those political boundaries when you are in your dealings with the Moms Clean Air Force?
Sure. I think that is a great question and a great point. I Moms Clean Air Force is a nonpartisan organization because these air issues are too important to be Democratic air issues or Republican air issues. These are human health issues, and this is a public health, you know, situation. And on a grassroots level, I work extensively with people from every political spectrum, and I love it. I think that strengthens, and I think it adds diversity to our message. And I think, you know, when you're a mom, it doesn't matter what political alliance you have. I think, you know, if you know your kid is being hurt by something, you bond with other moms regardless of those, you know, boundaries. And, you know, it's been amazing. I love working with people from all over the spectrum.
Jim, I wanted to talk to you a little bit. Since you're involved on the research side of things and you're doing a lot of the testing and data gathering and collecting to help bolster some of these arguments, tell me a little bit about what happens to your information from your laboratory once it's collected. Obviously, you don't make policy, you and your colleagues. You can only advise the people who do. So tell me what typically happens once you get results from experiments or the measurements that you're taking here in East Tennessee. What happens to them after that?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Yeah, our role is really to do the science that supports all of the regulations and all the other actions that we will act on based on the science. And we're going to take our information, we're going to put it in a publication, and we're going to put it out there for the public to read about. And it'll be in very technical journals, but it'll also be presented at conferences where we're interacting with industry, helping them know what to do for the next steps in cleaning up the vehicles or cleaning up the air, and also getting better fuel efficiency as well, because that's a major part of the challenge as well. And that information, once it's out publicly, also gets cited by the regulatory agencies. For instance, a lot of our research early in the 2000s was cited by the EPA in the rulemakings for the diesel heavy-duty engine emission regulations, and that gave them the justification to clean up the sulfur out of the fuel, the diesel fuel, which really enabled these catalytic converters on these heavy-duty vehicles to work, because sulfur is a real problem for catalytic converters. But our science showed how that was negatively impacting the catalyst, and the EPA took that data and enabled them to, you know, set the standard much lower, and so that the oil companies would have to produce gasoline or diesel fuels that had much less pollutant or problems like sulfur in them.
Mm. We have a call now from Kay in Loudoun County. Kay, go right ahead with your question.
Well, I don't have a question, but I do have a comment.
Okay.
I live in a private community, and it's a large private community. And some years ago, I guess, around 2000, this community has been in existence since about 1985. So somewhere around 2000, there were enough people residing here, and they felt that there was really poor air quality, and it was coming from a group of various manufacturing plants that were on the river. And it got to be quite a problem. And our organization, or the village, there were people in the village that wanted to form a group and make some investigations in this and work to improve the situation. Well, I can only tell you, it started as a very small group in around 2000, not sure the exact year. And the organization was named Breathe Clean Air Action Team. And naturally, it took money to do some of these things. And the residents were, you know, asked to make a contribution so these people could get the research done that they needed to. And take trips to Nashville and visit the organization that has control over the air quality. It was very effective. I wanted to make the point that there are, if you're in a manufacturing area, like it's not heavy duty, but there's a number of smaller medium-sized companies that are polluting the air. And each of those companies has a limit, and there's endless numbers of particles, different different chemicals that are going up into the atmosphere daily. Some of them you would have never heard of, but there's a level. Each company has a level, and they're supposed to meet those levels, stay at or below those levels. And when we actually got going, we had, I presume it's somebody from Nashville, come out and put monitors in various places one at a time. That wasn't easy to get done, but they put monitors out in the areas that perhaps were feeling we were including the whole county. We weren't just including our own private development. And those monitors stayed out, and they were red, and it showed that, you know, they were going well above what the allocation of output was.
Kay, I'm going to have to interrupt you right there, but thank you for sharing that with us. And that's an important cog in this entire machine. You can't really know the state of the atmosphere unless you are listening and looking and sniffing at the atmosphere with sensitive instruments. And anybody who's been to Look Rock up in the Great Smoky Mountains along the Foothills Parkway, there's an air quality monitoring station there. There are others throughout the Smokies that are maintained in part by the National Park Service, and then tons of other air quality monitors all around East Tennessee. Jim, that's an important part of basically taking the pulse of the atmosphere, knowing what's going on out there.
Absolutely, and we certainly don't have enough monitors out there. The ones we have certainly provide a lot of valuable information. But that's one of the great things that comes along with non-attainment. Obviously, we want to be in attainment of the air quality regulations, but not being in attainment, we're forced by EPA to actually look at our inventories and look at every source. And so all the industry that's in East Tennessee has to report, you know, their emissions to the local government, and that's all part of what non-attainment is about, so that we can first find what those sources are and then work to reduce them.
All right. And Janice, I'm pleased to report we got you back from Washington. We restored the phone connection there. It's good to have you back with us. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions in the minutes that we have left here about the most recent State of the Air report. And we alluded to this a little earlier in the hour, but I just wanted to go a little bit more in depth with you. Knox County has made some great strides, but my research here shows that Knox County received a D grade on high ozone days. It doesn't sound like that's a great deal for the county. Tell me a little bit about what those letter grade means, what those letter grades mean, sorry, and how we as the public should use those to be informed.
What we tried to do with this report originally, and still do, is translate what are really complicated air pollution numbers when you get into parts per billion or micrograms per cubic meter.
Right,
it's hard to understand. So we thought of putting it in a report card format using a regular standard like the ozone standard compared to its air quality index, those code orange, code red, code purple days. If we could take those two and translate that into a report card, we could actually help people understand how the air was in their community. And that's what we did. And so getting an F, which some counties, Blount County got, for example, means that you have more than 3.3 days on average each year that are unhealthy. We weight the day so that more polluted days get a higher weight, and we add them together and we divide by three, essentially. And we find out what the air quality is like in a community. So a D means that you are under that 3.3 limit, but it still doesn't mean that the air is necessarily healthy because, again, as we mentioned, that's a lot of days with unhealthy levels of ozone. But even more importantly is remember that Knox County is not where the pollution shows up that's in the Knoxville metropolitan area. It's showing up in Blount County, and it's not necessarily created there. It's created by the emissions that the entire metropolitan area produces that cook in the atmosphere and show up in those monitors. And that's why when we're looking at what the metropolitan area gets, we rank it based on the county with the most pollution, and Blount County is that one.
Oh, interesting. Now, it seems, Janice, that the data for the particulate matter in East Tennessee wasn't available this year. Can you tell me more about that?
Sure. This was, I think, a surprise to a lot of us, especially last summer when EPA and the state began to look at what areas did not meet the official limits on particle pollution that had been set in 2012. And they began to evaluate the air quality monitoring and the laboratory system. And I think they found, not only in Tennessee but in a few other states, that the laboratories had some problems in terms of some of the humidity control and things like that. Mm. And not trying to say that anybody didn't do their job, but I think it's always an education to us as when we started monitoring for particles, how challenging it could be to make sure that you maintained all of the quality requirements from the moment the slice left the monitor to the time it got processed can be complicated. And Tennessee was not alone in having its challenged area. My understanding is that they are thinking that they're going to have enough information next year to be able to evaluate and assess this so that we can have good data information about Tennessee, and that they've improved their laboratory process so that it will meet what is expected to be the strong standard requirements that the laboratories have to meet. The good news is that it tells us that we'll know for Tennessee how well the air quality is in Tennessee in another year or so. And that's really important because we need not only to know where unhealthy levels are, but we need to know whether the steps that we're doing are actually working as well as we thought they would be working. So we anticipate that the air has actually gotten a lot better, but we don't know if it's good enough yet. We don't know if we are meeting the standard. We don't know how the air quality is for particles across the state, except for Chattanooga. And I'll say Chattanooga used a different laboratory or different system, and their data are good. But the rest of Tennessee, along with parts of Georgia and Illinois, are all needing additional work in the lab.
That is interesting. I did not know that. We're going to go. We have time for one last call. Bill in Knoxville, you're on the air with Dialogue, and let her rip. You may want to turn down your radio. Bill's on a delay. I don't think he knows that he's on. We will skip Bill for right now. Sorry about that, Bill. But while we've still got you here, Jim, you're, again, the researcher in the room, the guy who's doing a lot of the sort of nuts and bolts research here. You've talked a little bit about what your office has already done. What comes next for you? What are some of the projects you're working on now or hope to accomplish in the next few years?
Well, one thing we're really focused on now is helping industry meet the light-duty standards, because they're going to be facing two major challenges. The Tier 3 emission regulations for passenger cars, very much dramatic reductions in NOx, PM, and hydrocarbons. But they're also having to make these really challenging fuel economy regulations. They're going to be making vehicles up to 54.5 mile per gallon by the year 2025. So, you know, it takes many years to design a vehicle and get it into production. So we're working right now together with industry to help them meet those emission regulations. So we're looking at advanced engine technologies, hybrid electric vehicles, all these different on-road solutions for the light-duty sector, enabled to get the industry to make these vehicles cost-effectively so we can afford them,
right,
but that they'll get out there on the road with both better fuel economy and much lower emissions. And that'll really help us here.
We've already seen that happening with hybrid cars, because I remember when they first came out, they were very expensive and not particularly versatile in terms of how they could get around or their range or whatnot. So we've already seen some evolution in the auto industry on bringing these standards to a more affordable platform, right?
Right, and that's a big thing we focus on, is we have a power electronics group that's focusing on getting the hybrid electric components to be lower size, lower cost, and better performing. And that's really what enables these technologies to take root on a large part of the fleet. And that's what we need. We need a lot of the fleet to turn over to these cleaner technologies.
And that's what you're saying, you mentioned earlier in this hour, would be happening over the next decade or so
as
old vehicles are phased out and new ones are purchased for fleets and trucking companies and things like that, then we'll see continued improvement that we may not even realize right now, but we'll be able to measure years down the road.
That's right, and also it's the way we use...
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Janice.
...area is the cleaner gasoline that's coming along, which will, because it has less sulfur, make our existing pollution emission on our existing cars work better, so that when we start using that cleaner gasoline, it will reduce the emissions. So we don't, for the gasoline-powered vehicles at least, we're not having to wait until the fleet turns over. This will actually improve your car and my car's, reduce its emissions. That's a great piece of news.
Yeah, that is interesting. Well, so Lindsay, what comes next for you? I imagine this is a thing that you keep working on continuously. There's not necessarily a finish line with the tape across it that you're going to burst through at some point, but a continuing process. What is next on the agenda for you and your group?
Sure. I've been working a lot with members all across Tennessee, and we've been really amplifying support for the Clean Power Plan, like I mentioned earlier. And also we've been really working around, like I mentioned too, EPA's new smog standards. We really want to see these for our kids. You know, as parents, we need to know the truth about whether the air our kids are breathing is safe or not. So we will continue until we know that it is.
And Janice, we have just about two and a half minutes left. What comes next for your work at the American Lung Association? You guys, of course, are issuing reports each year and keeping a constant watch on the air. What are you working on right now?
We're also working on the ozone standard, trying to help EPA understand that it's critically important that we have a standard that reflects what the current science says about the harm from ozone pollution. And the more we're looking into it, the more harm there is. Different parts of the body are affected that we hadn't appreciated before. We're also working on the Clean Power Plan, and that's going to help Tennessee especially because in addition to reducing carbon pollution, it will help reduce ozone and particles as well. So those are two big initiatives we're working on.
At the end of the day, and I'll run just one final time around the table for each of us here, and Janice, we'll start with you. At the end of the day, when you go home, do you feel like you're more optimistic or less optimistic about where we are, where we've come from, and where you think we're headed on air quality?
Absolutely more optimistic. One of the great things about having done this report for 16 years, we can see the improvements. We can see the trend showing cleaner air. And since it's my family that's breathing it, I'm eager to see those improvements in Tennessee especially. So very optimistic.
Jim, how about you?
I'm definitely optimistic as well. I'd also like to mention it was an interesting question one caller had on whether this is a partisan issue. I think this is an issue that everybody can get behind in the United States, and I think it's an issue where if you see other countries like China, you know, they've really put this issue aside, and it's really causing a lot of problems for them now. So I'm optimistic not only in our current state, but that we're really leading the world in terms of getting our air quality even cleaner.
Mm-hmm. And Lindsay?
Oh, I am also definitely optimistic. I mean, like everyone just mentioned, air quality standards improve air quality, and we've seen that. And, you know, just with working with so many people across the state, you know, seeing you can't underestimate the power of parental love. We will do anything to protect our children and make sure they're safe.
Well, we have actually just a few seconds left. I'm trying to think, does anybody have any final thoughts before we get out of here? 10, 20 seconds on anything we haven't covered that you'd like to mention. Yeah,
well, I would mention that, you know, one of the things that causes the vehicles to cause more emissions is more traffic. And so that's one thing we can do. We can reduce our vehicle use. We can take a look at our Google Maps before we go out and see where the traffic is and avoid it. Free-flowing traffic will produce less pollution and also be more fuel efficient. So that's something to think about when you're out there.
Also public transit, yeah.
That's right.
Buses and bicycles and other ways to get around. Exactly right. An excellent point, Jim. We didn't have time to cover that this time, but you're exactly right. There are other ways that we can reduce air pollution in a sort of a community setting as well. We could keep talking about this for the rest of the afternoon, but we're out of time right now on Dialogue. I do want to take a moment to thank all of our panelists today, Lindsay Pace and Jim Parks and Janice Nolan. Thank you to all of you for being with us today. And thanks also to Greg Hill. He's our producer and the man who answers the phones. Additional thanks to Jennifer Rennick, Antoinette Badami, and Megan McCorkle for helping put today's show together as well. Matt Schaefer-Powell, who helped devise the questions, and congratulations to his son, who's graduating from UT today. That's why he couldn't be here. And thanks to all of you for listening, calling, sending in your questions, and quizzing all of us on air quality. If you missed the show or you want to hear it again, it'll be up on our webpage later on this afternoon, WUOT.org. Dialogue is a production of WUOT News 91.9 FM, WUOT Knoxville, WUOT HD 1 Knoxville, a listener-supported service of the University of Tennessee. It is coming up on 2 o'clock Eastern Time.